Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast. Need more hardware for continuous integration? Use simulation. I'm your moderator, Brandon Lewis, with today's speakers, Eva Skoglund and Jacob Engblom from Wind River. Before we begin, there are a few housekeeping items to address, beginning with the features of your viewing console. First, the Enlarge Slides button will maximize the presentation slides to fill your entire screen. Second, the Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you prefer to follow along with a hard copy. Next, the Forward to a Friend button enables you to send an email that includes a registration link to this eCast so that friends and colleagues can also attend. The Ask a Question text box allows you to participate in the event by simply typing your question into the box and hitting Submit Question below. You can submit questions at any time during the course of the presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often while reviewing the material. Our sponsor will be sure to respond to all these questions following the event. And if you have any questions regarding the eCast operation itself, you can submit those as well, and one of our technicians will be happy to assist you as soon as possible. Now to get right into the teeth of our event, I'd like to hand it off to Eva. Eva, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Brendan. Welcome to this webinar, which is the first in a series of three about how to achieve maximum velocity in embedded development. We believe that you might have experienced that you need more hardware when you move to continuous integration, and that you have also experienced limitations with hardware that prevent you from really doing continuous integration. We're going to propose a simulation solution to this. My name is Eva Skoglund, and I'm the marketing manager for Simex at Wind River. And with me today, I have my colleague, Jacob Engblom, who's the product line manager for Simex. Hello, Jacob.
Hello, happy to be here.
So what we'll be talking about today and in the coming two webinars is all about how system software is developed and deployed. And regardless of what type of code or system you develop, the way developers work is very different now. I personally was a developer many years ago, and I can see that the way we used to work back then was very different. And I think that this will be both a fun and a dramatic ride with lots of efficiency improvements. Now, the market observation that we have done at Wind River is that the new development practices like agile, continuous integration, continuous deployment, and cross-functional teams are now getting established also for embedded software development. The reason why this is happening is that software is becoming the dominating value contributor for embedded systems, and it provides the possibility to differentiate from competitors. So now it's becoming clear for the business owners that faster delivery of software is key to accelerate and increase the revenue. Essentially, customers don't accept to wait a year or two for new and updated software anymore. And most software engineers have probably heard or experienced this pressure. You've got to release faster. Now, we know that embedded systems development is very different from developing a web or an IT application. The target hardware that we develop and depend on doesn't exactly make it easy for us to adopt these new methodologies. And most of the challenges that we see can be categorized as related to access or related to collaboration or related to automation. And in today's session, we'll focus on the access challenge, the one that's highlighted in yellow here. Access meaning that you don't always have the hardware access that you would need in order to move to continuous integration testing. And in our upcoming two webinars, we'll be addressing challenges around collaboration and automation. Now, what's happening is that the old classic lifecycle with design, platform development, application development, test and integration, deployment and maintenance is changing. Test and integration is now a continuous, ongoing activity that happens throughout the product lifecycle. And it doesn't just happen during the development of the product, but also after deployment, when the product is in a maintenance phase. Software gets updated in deployed products, and as such, it is continuously tested and integrated. So this means that the specific test and integration phase that was occurring after development only is now changing, and in some cases, it's even vanishing.
Well, if I'm allowed to butt in here, I would say that I find it hard to believe that T&I can just go away. I mean, you need something, some kind of quality assurance phase that it's more about, you know, making sure that things actually work before you ship it. I mean, I would be a bit scared if I tried to just say, well, we test it and develop and let's go off and ship it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it depends on what type of system is being built and how you view your process. You can either see production quality as being part of the continuous test and integration system, where it would then be the final step in that process, meaning that the end goal of the CI system is to have production quality. Or you have a dedicated QA phase after your continuous integration and test phase, which would then be a specific activity, maybe with specific equipment. And in this case, QA would not be considered part of the continuous test integration process, but more of a separate activity.
Okay. So how does this actually work in practice? I mean, here's a slide that tries to illustrate just what continuous practice actually means. You have some quick tests that you immediately run build, where you run them and make sure things are roughly good. And if those tests pass, you integrate things into something bigger, which might take, you know, a coffee break or a lunch, depending on the size of the system. And once you can see that your change code works in that context, you push into an even bigger integration that could, maybe you run it daily or weekly, I mean, depending on the system. And in that case, you kind of make sure that your change code works in an even bigger context. And the reason you do this is really that you want to have quick feedback to developers. As soon as possible, you want to get back to them and tell them, look, your code didn't work. They can fix it while it's still fresh at the top of the mind. Also, each level of integration tends to find different types of errors. And obviously, what we want to avoid here in the end is big bang integration, which everybody knows is painful. So by integrating continuously and gradually, you avoid the issues with big bang integration. And obviously, I mean, if you're doing testing like this, you're going to be running regression testing to avoid any old errors creeping back in. And this all means that you get code of higher quality and with shorter lead times.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of the difficulties that you're going to run into here, they are related to limited access to the target hardware. Plus, I would also say that hardware can sometimes be difficult to depend upon because it's fragile at times. Now, the obvious issue is that you don't have the amount of target hardware that you would ideally need. You might also have to wait for access to certain equipment, or wait for a result to be reported back from a test lab, or you lose time having to change setups or configurations. What this causes is a loss of velocity. You kind of lose the momentum of flow, so to speak, that you had when you wrote your code. It's no longer fresh in your mind. And so not only is this a matter of being a bottleneck, it also causes an inability to scale out your test and integration. You may get quality problems as well, because if you don't have the needed amount of hardware, you may have to reduce your test matrix to fix what you can test instead of what you would want to test. So in the end, you might end up having those late-stage integration problems that you wanted to get away from in the first place by introducing continuous integration. Now, an important point here is that these types of process problems and inefficiencies aren't just a problem that's isolated to an engineering department. It affects the bottom line of the company. Inefficiencies and quality problems with software development, they just cause a lag in time to market, and it causes increasing costs for the company as a whole.
True, but I think there's also some more subtle issues at play here. I mean, the fundamental nature of embedded systems and embedded hardware makes it hard to do automatic test integration, even if the hardware itself was, you know, dirt cheap and infinitely available. And to explain why, have a look at this diagram here. I mean, this is how you typically test embedded software in the real world. You have some kind of system on the test, which is a board, and that physical board is connected to some kind of target provisioning and control thingy, which is connected to the system on the test by JTAG or serial or Ethernet, or you might even have a flash program where you manually move the code in. And that computer is responsible for making the system on the test actually run something. But it's not just about the code, right? You also need environment. And in order to provide environment, you have a second machine or specialized piece of hardware that provides the inputs over the various, you know, GPIOs and analog and digital and buses and networks and whatever lines go into your system under test. And that's another part of the hardware test lab. And if you take these three pieces together, well, they must be managed by some, you know, remote test manager that actually tells them, you know, run this scenario, load this code, do this, and report results. And you need to collect the code from the build server, obviously, to do the testing. So what happens then? Well, first of all, I want to make sure that everybody knows that you absolutely need a hardware for proper quality assurance towards that. I mean, simulation can help you, but you do need a hardware to make sure that you test what you ship and you ship what you test. However, these hardware test labs are difficult and expensive to build. It's actually pretty hard to automate them reliably, and that means that you run your integration test less often than you really should, and you often have a limited set of intermediate configurations available, which means that there's nice continuous continuum of, you know, building things up piece by piece can be very hard to do because you just don't have all the intermediate steps, which means, once again, we get back to Big Bang integration because maybe you can only use the hardware test lab for real for full system integration. And finally, as Eva mentioned before, the tests tend to get adopted to the available setups rather than the other way around because a test which you cannot run is a pretty lousy test, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think these issues are very true. Now, let's check if our audience recognizes any of these by doing a poll. So here we'd like your feedback, everybody in the audience. So what issues do you recognize with your own hardware lab? Note here that you should check all options that apply. Is your hardware lab difficult or expensive to build and maintain? Is complete automation of tests difficult to achieve? Do your integration tests run less often than they should? Do you have to wait a long time for hardware being available to test changes in new code? Does the available hardware configurations limit your testing, either by not covering all desired integration levels or all desired test setups? What do you say, Jacob? Do you have a personal favorite problem here?
Well, not really. I think it's mostly about the waiting. That's the one that strikes me as the most devastating and actually also the most unexpected.
Yeah, I agree. I also kind of thinking that complete automation is something that's difficult.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, the automated setups we have seen tend to be fairly monstrous things. I mean, they work, but it's not easy.
So let's see, we have some results, so let's see what we have. Okay, we have automation, 78, almost 79%, and yeah, these are expected, I mean, they're high numbers, right?
Yes, it's very even. It seems like the majority has most of the problems.
Yes, exactly. It's very even. Yeah. Okay. So that was very interesting. Okay, so next one, Jacob, simulation test lab.
Yeah, so this is our solution. So the idea that we propose is that instead of relying on hardware for the test lab, you use simulation. And that means that you simulate your system under test. And it means that you use simulation tools to provision it with code instead of having to have a second machine for that. And you also take the world model and run that as software connected via software channels to the system on a test. And this means that the entire hardware lab we had before is now a set, a single piece or maybe multiple pieces of software. And that makes it so much easier to manage and work with it. So running things in a simulator brings a lot of benefits. The first one is that you can run things on any PC or any server, and that means as soon as any test string becomes available, you can run your test. And this means you can test across different products at different points in time. So if you have some kind of campaign on a particular one, well, you can just take all of your test service and test one particular target for a while. With hardware, it's very difficult to kind of repurpose it like that because each piece of hardware is highly specific. That's its job. Another thing is that in simulation, it's much easier to scale things up and down. If you want all these intermediate setups, which you need for a true continuous continuum, simulation makes it so much easier to achieve that compared to having lots of different partial hardware labs. It's also very easy to manage and create new configurations, since now it's just a piece of programming rather than having to change actual physical hardware configurations. And finally, I'd like to point out that in simulation, it's really easy to maintain old things, because if you build a model of your old hardware, that model is going to be available as long as you have hardware to run it on. And that really makes it so much easier if you try to keep some old rickety hardware alive. So let's have a closer look at how you would build a simulation for your typical embedded system. Not everything might look like this, but this is a pattern we see a lot. And on the left-hand side, you have the simulation of the computer system, where you actually run the real code, operating system, applications, everything that you would run on your real system. That's very important. And then you simulate the IOs you have towards the world and use the same drivers as you would have once again on the real system. So this means you don't have to use a special simulation build to get to I.O. And once you have this, well, you need something to talk to, right? So you have some kind of simulation, the bulldozer here or the Bobcat, which represents the system that you manage, the system that you control. It could be a vehicle, it could be some machine, something. And in that simulation, that's where you do the mechanics and electronics of the actual system. And you have simulation of the actuation and sensors, which pass values back to computer simulation. And finally, I mean, you need some kind of context as well. Just having that bulldozer doesn't gain you much because you really want to see how that works in the world. So you usually have a third component, which is a simulation of the world around the system. And, I mean, different people could do this in different ways, but in general, this is how we do it. You need the control system, the controlled system and the world around it to have a complete system simulation.
So this is kind of a trinity of simulation, but I guess you don't have to simulate all three parts to be able to do continuous integration, or do you?
Oh, and if you have a mechanical system, this is the structure we typically see. I mean, we actually do need all these three parts because in the end you want to test the complete system integrated, and integrated for an embedded system means integrating with the world. Sure, I mean, there are systems where it's simpler, like networking systems, where it's usually a, network and my system. Absolutely.
But still, you might have, like, traffic generators or something that could kind of be
yes.
part of that as well. But so let's once again go to our audience and do a poll and see what people simulate. So in your simulation strategy today, what do you simulate? Only the computer system, meaning the CPU, all the boards, et cetera, or only the system itself, the Bobcat in the previous picture, meaning the mechanics and the electronic system, or do you perhaps simulate both the system and the world around it, or do you simulate all three components? The computer, the system itself, and the world surrounding it, or maybe some other configuration. Let's give people a minute or so to answer here. My guess is that we might see most votes for simulating the complete system and the world around it, which would be three here. What do you think?
Yeah, but that would seem like, I mean, when I talk to people building really embedded systems, that tends to be where the most work has been put into simulation. But you never know. I mean, depending on the product, maybe somebody built a computer system simulator themselves.
Yeah, it's very highly dependent on the system. So let's check if we have any results here. Okay, I'm going to push these results. Okay, what do we have here? The system and the world around it, 39% almost. And then only the computer system, that was very high, 27% there. That's good.
I think this is actually very good. I mean, I think the people attending the seminar are doing better than most other people are actually.
You seem to have a simulation audience. That's good. Excellent. Okay, Jacob, I think you have, let me see. Yeah, the computer system, simulating the computer system.
Yeah, so let's finish up our how do you do this in simulation with a short look at how we do computer simulation with Wind River Simex. And a key part here is that, as you said before, what you want to achieve is that you want to run the real software of your target system. And that means you need to simulate the processors and memory and interrupt controllers and timers and buses, and all the pieces of the hardware need to be simulated. Because that means you can then run your boot code, you can run your BIOS, you can run your operating system and drivers and BSPs and everything, and run your applications in an environment that's, you know, pretty much like the real thing. It's also worth pointing out that we can actually simulate multiple boards within a single simulation system. So even if your control system is actually a little unit containing four boards in some kind of shockproof enclosure, well, that's absolutely simulatable. And since this is simulation, we also have a bunch of nice features which we show on the right here, which is, you know, various ways to integrate with other tools. You have debugging, and you have scripting, and you have automation hooks. So there's a lot you can do to work with embedded hardware when you use a simulator that is really difficult to do in the real world. So what do we get? If we've done everything nicely, this is how we typically see continuous integration being done in practice. If you compare to the previous one, we kind of added a little box here called the pre-CI test, because that's actually what people do. You tend to have some kind of local sanity check before you even consider checking in your code. And once it's checked in, you pass it to the build system, and the build system might complain, and then you run your unit test and your subsystem test and your system level test. And in our experience, simulation is eminently applicable to pre-CI and unit testing and subsystem testing and some part of the system level test, because you do need to test what you ship and ship what you test in the end, but a large part of the system level testing can be done in simulation anyway. So why do you want to do this? Well, as we said before, this shortens your test latency. You can run tests more often. That's actually very important. You can shorten the time between running the same tests so that errors don't creep in. You can try more and different configurations, which means you have a bigger test matrix, which means you find more errors earlier and fewer things escape out of the real world. You can provide a nice configuration for every intermediate level in your continuous flow, which is actually very important. And you can do things which just couldn't be tested on hardware, and that is something we're going to talk about in our next webinar that's coming up in a few weeks.
So your point here, Jacob, is that this type of continuous integration system that you have here, that is possible to run both on physical target hardware and to run on simulation. But if you use simulation, you will get the benefits that you list here.
Yes, I would say that's absolutely true. I mean, I know that CI can be done, even for embedded systems using hardware, but it's hard, and you're going to have lots of the limitations you talked about, even if you kind of have it working, right? But if you apply simulation, you are going to get all the benefits we list here, and it really makes it possible to take your continuous practices and your continuous integration to a completely new level. Really?
Yeah, I agree. So if we sum up a little bit here, if we tie back to the challenges with access that we talked about in the beginning, by augmenting physical hardware with simulation-based test lab, you now have a solution that's more stable and flexible, something that you can depend upon. It's easy to equip developers with a system they need, both for spontaneous testing and continuous integration-based testing. You save a lot of time, both because you reduce waiting and preparation time, and you remove limitations when it comes to lab configurations, which means that you can now test what you really need to test. And as a developer, you now get much faster feedback on your code. These engineering benefits and productivity improvements translate to company value. Above all, you gain in velocity. It's also possible to increase quality and scale out testing without necessarily having to increase costs. So finally, you can reduce those late-stage integration bugs and emergencies. The bottom line now is that projects and products now can be delivered on time and under budget. So with that, I hope we've been able to provide you with some new ideas and takeaways today. I think we all experience that we never have enough physical hardware, not enough to really do continuous integration and testing at the scale we want to do it. And we certainly see how a technology like Simics enables new software practices because of the unlimited target access it gives and the flexibility it provides in terms of how you can continuously test and integrate your embedded system software. So now I just want to say thank you for listening today and hand over to our moderator, Brandon.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thanks for the nice results in the polls.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks, Jacob. That's some good insight there on giving us sort of a baseline for laying the foundations of using simulation for continuous integration. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of our time today. We at Open Systems Media and Wind River would like to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing into those polls that we had some good response to. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will be made available there as well. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media's eCast available for download as MP3s there. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.